Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lottoannahmestelle. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter bjork.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The commission was from a London magazine I'd worked with before. It was a long-form piece, about 6,000 words, and a photo essay, all on the ecological recovery in the Chernobyl zone. The angle was genuinely good, genuinely surprising if you hadn't read the science. In 38 years without humans, the exclusion zone had become, accidentally, the largest wildlife sanctuary in Europe. Surprisingly, wolves had returned in numbers not seen in the region since before industrialization. There were lynx, wild boar, white-tailed eagles, and a population of Przewalski's horses introduced as an experiment in the 90s that had thrived beyond any reasonable projection. The absence of humans had done more for the ecosystem than any conservation program, which said something worth saying. The radiation was still there, measurable, but it turned out wolves didn't care about elevated background radiation in the way they cared about being shot, which they no longer were. This was the piece. What happens to a landscape when people leave it entirely? I'd spent 3 weeks reading the ecology literature before I came, and I had a genuine interest in the subject that made the work easier. I wanted to photograph a wolf if I could. I wanted to photograph the zone's edges at dawn, where the forest had reclaimed the outskirts of Pripyat, and you could stand in what had once been a residential street and find it fully wooded, the pavement broken by roots, the street signs lost in undergrowth. My counter clicked up to 1.4 microsieverts, and I noted it and moved on. That was part of the job. A Rasoka, you learn not to dwell on the numbers. The helicopters absorb your attention anyway. There were hundreds of them, spread across the flat ground in rusting rows. The Mi-8s and the M-26s that flew over the reactor in the weeks after the explosion, trailing their water and sand and lead. Some still had their rotors. Some lost them to weather or theft and sit with their necks exposed, the stumps of their rotor hubs corroded green. From a distance, they looked like a parking lot from a war that finished badly. Up close, crouched between two of them, with a 2470 at F8, the scale of the things hits you again each time. The cockpit windows were still intact on most. When the light catches them, they reflect the sky. I got the shot I wanted, a line of five of them receding into morning haze, the nearest one sharp and the furthest dissolved, and stood up, and the counter clicked again, and I checked it. It had climbed to 1.9. "Back up," Mikola said from behind me, not urgently. I backed up 3 steps, and the reading dropped. He nodded, and we moved to the next row. That was how it went with him. Information delivered as it became relevant, in the same even tone he used for everything. The floor on the 3rd level of the administration building had collapsed into the 2nd, in the school in Pripyat. You could touch the desks and the floors, but not the window frames. Something in the paint had concentrated it. And everywhere in the zone, not the air. Never worry about the air. The air is fine. The dust was the problem. Don't touch your face. Don't put anything on the ground that you'll be touching later. He had been doing this for 15 years. He had a way of standing slightly ahead of you in any given space, position between you and whatever direction he hadn't cleared yet. I'd stopped noticing it after the first few hours, the same way you stop noticing the presence of the cockpit on a long flight. You don't verify the pilot. You require a pilot, and so there is one, and you extend the necessary trust, and that's the whole transaction. The first day was clean, new material, the work running ahead of the anxiety. We were in Pripyat by 6 before the zone's perimeter opened to the trickle of tourists permitted in organized groups, and I had the fairground to myself. The Ferris wheel was the obvious shot, and I took it anyway, because obvious shots are obvious for a reason. And then I moved off and found angles that were less obvious. The bumper car arena with the cars still in their positions, as if the power had cut mid-ride, the soles of their wheels rusted to the floor. The Palace of Culture, with its Soviet mosaic facade still largely intact. The workers and cosmonauts rendered in tesserae, looking out over a street empty of everything except weeds growing through tarmac. I worked for 5 hours, and Mikola was somewhere nearby for all of them. I say somewhere, because I wasn't tracking him, and didn't need to. Every time I moved to a new building or a new section of the street, I was aware of him in the peripheral way you're aware of the light, when you're not focused on it, but its absence would register immediately. The Zone Authority's accommodation was a converted administration building at the checkpoint. 2 bedrooms, a shared bathroom, a kitchen with a table, and a mounted television that received 4 channels. It smelled of old concrete and the specific institutional cleaning product that seemed mandatory in post-Soviet buildings. I'd slept in worse. The bed was narrow, the mattress had a dip in the center, but I slept well enough in it. Before I slept, I went through the day's photographs on my laptop, which was the routine. Flag the keepers, delete the obvious failures, make notes on what I still needed. I'd shot 400 frames, and maybe 60 of them were worth examining seriously, which was a good ratio for a first day. I worked through them slowly. The photograph was from the 4th floor of one of the apartment blocks on Lesya Ukrainki Street. I shot it mid-morning, looking down and west, into the street below and the tree line at its far end. A good frame. The geometry of the empty street, the way the trees had started to reclaim the pavement at the edges, the sense of the forest waiting at the boundary of human construction. I'd flagged it already as a keeper. I zoomed in on the tree line and looked for hints of the wildlife I was seeking. A shape was at the tree line's edge, half in and half out of the shadows between 2 birch trunks. I pushed the zoom to the pixel limit. Compression noise, the image breaking into blocks. But the shape was there. And its proportions were wrong for a wolf and wrong for a boar. Subtly off, the way a word looks off when you've stared at it too long. The thing my eye kept returning to was the height. I looked at it for a while, then closed the laptop. Got into the narrow bed with the dip in the middle, and went to sleep. In the morning, Mikola was already in the kitchen with a coffee made and a map of the day's route on the table, and I sat down, poured a coffee, and looked at the map. I said nothing about the photograph. I have thought about this decision many times since. I don't have a clean explanation for it. Something like, the photograph was mine, the shape in the tree line was mine, and giving it to someone else would make it real in a way I wasn't ready for at 6 in the morning with a day's work ahead. So, I said nothing. I drank the coffee, I looked at the map. We left for the hospital at 8:30. Mikola told me to wait at the Jeep. The same flat instruction as every time before we entered a building. And every time I waited. And he was back within 5 minutes. I leaned against the Jeep with my camera and went through yesterday's frames and didn't think much about it. The hospital entrance stood open, the double door frame without its doors. He went through it, and the building swallowed him. 5 minutes. 10. I radioed him and got static. Tried again at 15. At 20, I started calculating how long it would take to reach the checkpoint on foot if his radio had simply died, and this was nothing. At 25 minutes, I went in after him. In the ground floor, the plaster peeled off in sheets, graffiti across every surface, the flat grey light coming through filthy windows. I called his name. My voice went into the building and stopped, absorbed rather than echoed, the silence reasserting itself immediately. No answer. I went upstairs. Second floor clear. I kept calling every few rooms and getting nothing back. On the third floor, I stopped halfway down the corridor. A sound, below me, too far down for the second floor, maybe the ground floor, possibly lower. A scraping, intermittent, the sound something makes moving carefully through a dark space. Mikola had gone down to check a basement, I thought. I started down the stairs to meet him and pulled the radio off my belt. Mikola? I pressed transmit. I'm on the third floor. Where are you? The chirp of his radio sounded off somewhere far beneath me. I heard my own transmission echo back from his speaker, the half-second delay. And underneath it, just before the echo died, another sound. Mikola's voice, but not words. A sound a person makes when air leaves them suddenly and without choice. I went down. While descending, I heard a follow-up sound. It sounded like someone had put shaving foam on their hands and clapped. A visceral, wet sound that I couldn't piece together. Followed soon after by a metallic crunching. At the ground floor, I went quickly and quietly without consciously deciding to do either. The chirp had come from the far end, past the main corridor junction, where a set of doors led toward an old administration section. One of them was ajar. I pushed it open and went through. The room beyond had been some kind of records office, filing cabinets along the walls, most of them open and empty, papers on the floor, a desk overturned in the far corner. The room's only window was half-boarded, the light coming through in a single grey bar. Mikola was on the floor. I got 3 steps into the room before I stopped. I had been so used to the colour saturation of the place that the bright reds scattered about gave me pause. It was messy. So much had happened that I was shocked there wasn't more noise. Whatever had done this had done it incredibly fast. But it wasn't finished. In the distance, I could hear it still working. It was at the far end of the room, in the corner where the light didn't reach, low to the ground, not moving. I couldn't tell you what I was looking at in terms of shape or size, because my eyes kept failing to hold it, kept sliding off it the way eyes slide off things that don't resolve into known categories. What I can tell you is that it was large, and that it was still in the way that things are still when they're not done. I did not breathe. I stood in the doorway with my hands still on the door, and I watched it, and I did not look up. I stepped back through the door, 1 step, 2, into the corridor. I pulled the door as slowly as I could, put my back against the wall, and slid down it until I was sitting on the floor and stayed there. The understanding came in pieces when your mind is protecting you from arriving at it all at once. The chirp, his radio going off in the dark, my own voice playing out of his speaker in a silent building. The sound he'd made. The sound of the transmission had found him, and so did whatever was with him at the same moment. And what it did. I stopped the thought there and started it again from somewhere more useful. I was on the ground. The exit was at the end of the main corridor, 30 feet away. I was going to stand up and walk to it and go through it and get in the jeep and drive south. I stood up, walked to the entrance. The frame had been closed. It hadn't been like this when I entered. There were no doors. There hadn't been since long before today. The frame itself had been deformed, the metal on both ends bent inward toward each other, the gap it left perhaps 18 inches across. The courtyard light came through it, the jeep visible beyond, close enough that I could see the dent in the front left panel. I put my hands on the frame and pushed, and it moved perhaps an inch and stopped. I got my shoulders into the gap, turned sideways, and shoved. One shoulder through. The metal found the other and held. I pushed harder, the frame groaning under the pressure, and the groan rang down the corridor behind me. And I heard it, from the floor I had just come from, the sound of something beginning to move. I pulled back. The metal stripped a length of skin from my forearm as I came free, and the groan of the frame was still ringing down the corridor. Movement, sudden and decisive, weight finding the floor with a speed that didn't match the slow movement I'd heard before. This was a response. I ran, away from the entrance, back down the corridor. My footsteps were loud and I stopped caring. The noise had already happened. Distance was all that mattered now. The stairwell door, through it, away, but deeper into the building. It was the only option the building was giving me. On the second floor, I went through the first door I reached and got behind the remains of a metal cabinet that had come away from the wall and crouched down, pulled my knees in, and made myself as small as I could against the baseboard. The building moved around me, weight on the stairwell, then not, a displacement in the corridor outside the room, something passing the door with a proximity I felt before I heard it, the air pressure changing slightly, the dust on the floor nearest the door lifting in a faint current. A pause, long enough that the urge to look became almost physical, the need to know where it was, and I pressed my forehead against the cold metal of the cabinet and did not look. At some point, I looked at the counter. Just something to do with my eyes that wasn't the door. The number sat at 2.8, higher than the building's baseline. I watched it for a while. Then, somewhere below me, the sound shifted and the number dropped to 2.6. I watched it drop again as the sound grew fainter. 2.4, 2.2. I stayed still, watched it fall, and understood what I was looking at. It couldn't be ambient radiation from the building from the way it changed. It was something else. Something that moved. I didn't know what to do with that yet, but I noted it the way I'd been trained to note things. As information, not a conclusion yet. And I kept watching the number until it settled at 1.6. I stayed where I was until the silence had been complete and unbroken for what felt like a very long time. Then I stayed for the same amount of time again. The corridor was empty, and I needed to move. No plan beyond the immediate. There was one exit I knew of, and it was closed. There had to be another one. Basic architecture of institutional construction, and I was going to find it before the thing below found me. That was the entirety of my thinking. I went through each room on the south side where the external wall would give onto the rear of the building, checking windows, checking frames. The first three wouldn't move at all, the corrosion welding them to their frames as completely as if they'd been bricked over. The fourth had a handle that turned, and I felt the frame shift fractionally before it stopped, the seal of 40 years of weather and neglect holding it shut. I put my shoulder into it, and it didn't give. Doing it harder would make noise I couldn't afford. So, I moved on. The drop from the second floor windows was survivable anyway. 2 stories to scrub ground, nothing broken if you landed right, but survivable meant nothing if I couldn't get through the frame quietly. Quiet was the only currency I had. The third floor, east corridor. I went carefully, heel to toe, the way you walk when you're aware of every sound your body makes. And at the corridor's far end, I found the fire door. The handle turned. I let out a breath I'd been holding since the second floor and pushed the door open. The daylight hit me, grey and cold, and the most welcome thing I'd seen in an hour. An external metal staircase running down the rear of the building to the ground. The rear courtyard below, smaller than the front, had a chain-link fence along its edge, and beyond the fence, the tree line. The jeep wasn't there, but the ground-level fence I could climb, and the forest I could move through until I hit the perimeter road. I stepped out onto the first tread, second tread, the third. Then, the section beneath my feet pulled away from the wall. The mounting bolts on the right side had corroded through at some point in the last decade, and the whole right flank of the staircase swung outward from the brickwork with a sound that started as a groan and became something much larger. Metal pulling from brick, the structure twisting on its remaining fixings, the groan becoming a shriek that went through the building and through the ground. I grabbed the doorframe with both hands and hauled myself back through the opening, my feet scrambling for purchase on the tilting treads. I got inside, pulled the door shut behind me, and stood against it, my hands shaking. The staircase hadn't fallen. I could hear it settling outside the door, the occasional tick of stressed metal finding its new position, useless and enormously, catastrophically loud. The counter hit 3.4, a spike, instantaneous. I stared at it, 3.4 and climbing, 3.6, the reading I associated with the way it did when you walk directly toward a hot source. It was moving, coming from the stairwell end of the corridor, and it was getting closer, fast. I went to the nearest door and dropped to the floor behind the wall beside the frame, and made myself as small as possible. The counter in my hand read 3.8, and I turned the screen face down against my thigh. The sound came from the corridor, fast. This was direct, something that had heard a specific location and was going to it. The fire door. I heard the handle move, heard the door open, the creak of it, the shifted staircase groaning at the disturbance. Silence. It was in the doorway, looking at the staircase with no one on it. I pressed my back into the wall and watched the ceiling, trying not to breathe. The door closed, the sounds moved away from the fire door, back down the corridor. Slower now, the purposefulness gone out of them. I waited, listened to the movement descend, floor by floor, the sounds diminishing. And then I looked at the counter. I watched it for a long time, tracking the movement, reading the position from the changes. 3.8 had become 3.2 when the sounds left the corridor, then 2.8 as they went down the stairwell, then 2.4, a pause, 2.2, a lateral movement. The number rose slightly to 2.4 with other sounds getting louder, which meant horizontal distance rather than vertical, the creature crossing the floor below rather than ascending, then down again, 2.0, 1.8. I stayed completely still for 5 minutes while faint sounds moved through the lower floors and watched the number respond, rise when the sounds came closer to the stairwell, drop when they moved away. It wasn't precise. I couldn't get a direction from it, couldn't tell if a rise meant it was below me or down the corridor, only that it was closer or further in some aggregate sense. But closer and further was information, more than I'd had. When the number sat at 1.6 and the sounds had been absent for several minutes, I got up off the floor. I moved to the stairwell, put distance between me and whatever the lower floors contained, and the fourth floor had the highest windows and the best view. I needed to see the building's geography from the outside before I made any decision about the inside. I went up one floor at a time, stopping at each landing to read the counter and listen. It stayed at 1.6. I made the fourth floor and went to the window at the corridor's end, the one facing the front courtyard, and I looked out. The Jeep was there, undisturbed, exactly where we'd left it. The windscreen was filmed with road dust. The courtyard was empty. The gate at the courtyard's far side was open. Beyond it, the access road ran south, straight and clear. And 12 kilometers down that road was the checkpoint and other people. I looked at the entrance frame from up here. The buckled gap, 18 inches of deformed metal between me and all of that. From four floors up, it looked almost manageable. Almost. I looked at it for a long time. Then I checked my watch. Early afternoon, the light coming through the window was still full, hours before dark. Though I didn't know what that dark meant for my situation. Only that light felt like an ally, and I wanted as much of it as I could get. The question wasn't whether the gap was passable. The question was whether I could reach it with the counter low and enough time to work it slowly with the entrance clear. Two problems, all of them solvable in theory. I sat down under the window with my back against the wall and the counter in my lap. And I started thinking about how. A pipe had come off a burst radiator fitting on the fourth floor. I'd found it, working my way along the rooms, testing floors, cataloging options. A meter of steel, heavy, the threading at one end still intact. I didn't know yet what I was going to use it for. I took it anyway. The third floor fire door was a bust, but there was still one on the second. I already knew the staircase outside was gone, but the door itself opened inward. If the drop to the rear courtyard was clear, there was an escape possibility I hadn't fully exhausted. The lock was the problem. Counter at 1.6. I moved. I made it to the second floor landing. I went heel to toe, the pipe held against my body to stop it swinging, the counter in my other hand. A steady 1.6. I reached the fire door and stopped, listened, and the building gave me nothing back, just the tick and creak of old concrete doing what old concrete did. I put the pipe's threaded end into the lock housing. The mechanism was corroded, but not solid. I could feel movement in it, the give of metal that had rusted into position rather than being engineered into one. I applied pressure, steady, a low force of leverage rather than impact. The lock moved. A millimeter, then another. The pipe trembled in my hands with the resistance of it. 20 seconds, 30. The lock turned. I caught the door as it swung inward, before I could move more than an inch, the hinges silent enough that I almost didn't need to, but I wasn't taking any chances. I stood with my hand flat against the door, and I listened. The counter said 1.6, and the corridor behind me was empty. I pulled the door open, 6 inches, and it stopped. A solid resistance, the door pressing against something. I pulled harder, controlled, putting heft into it, and nothing moved. I could see through the 6-inch gap, grey daylight. I stepped back to get the full picture. The floor was warped. Decades of decay made the floor bulge just enough to jam the door. I shoved it hard, trying to see if the door could force the lump down or at least flex around it. The door scraped with a sound like an avalanche, grinding brick that went on for 2 full seconds and echoed off the rear courtyard walls and came back and echoed again. The counter hit 3.2 before the echo died. I closed the door and moved, fast, back down the corridor, away from the fire door, into the first room I reached and hid. The counter at 3.4, 3.6. The sounds came up from below. The stairwell, something ascending with a horrible purposefulness. It went to the fire door and stopped. I heard the handle move, the door opened and jammed. The sound moved away, slower this time, laterally, along the corridor outside, a long patrol of the floor, before finally descending. I watched the counter drop in increments and didn't relax until it was back at 1.6. When I finally stood up, I went to the window at the corridor's end and looked out, and the light told me what I already knew. It had changed. The flat white of the afternoon was gone, replaced by something lower and angled, the shadows in the courtyard longer than they'd been an hour ago. The light through the dirty glass of an afternoon running out, trending toward dusk with the inevitability of all things today that had gone wrong. I worried about my chances of survival in the pitch black. Time was running out. I went back to the fourth floor, sat against the wall beneath the window, and went through the exits one more time. Ground floor entrance, 18 inches of buckled frame, impassable without noise. Noise meant it came. That door was closed. The fire exit was out of the question. Unjamming the door would take time and make that sound continuously for as long as it took. I'd be doing it with a counter climbing toward 4 the entire time. That door was closed. The windows on the second floor was a survivable drop, 8 feet to the ground below, but the second floor windows facing the front courtyard were jammed. I'd have less time to work on them, and even if I dropped from a second floor window, it would be into open ground. I did not think I would make 30 meters. I checked the counter, a steady 1.9. It was up a floor, I could only assume, looking for me. I let the facts settle. Every exit in this building was closed. The light was going. The thing below me had been stalking all day. I had nothing that told me it would stop on the floor it moved to, slowly working its way up to me. Nothing except a pattern I'd observed for only a few hours in a building I'd been inside for the worst afternoon of my life. The panic had burned through hours ago. What was left was something quieter, and in some ways worse. A flat, clear-eyed assessment of a situation with no remaining moves. I was not going to get out of this building before dark by any method I could think of. But this wasn't true. There was still a place I hadn't looked, a stone left unturned. The question was whether I could face him again. I had known where Mikola was since the ground floor corridor. I had known, and I had not gone there. I told myself this was tactical, that the counter was too high, the creature was too close, there was no reason to go to a place that served no purpose except to confirm what I already knew. This was not entirely a lie, but it was not entirely the truth either. The counter dropped at 4:20, the secondary reading that had been sitting at 2.1 for the last 40 minutes simply fell away, the number returning to 1.4 in the space of 2 readings. I watched it for 3 minutes, waiting for it to climb again. It didn't. It had gone somewhere where the building's mass was muffling its signature. The basement maybe, the far end of the ground floor, somewhere that wasn't between me and the corridor below. 5 minutes, maybe less. I knew by now how quickly the number could move. I braced myself and went downstairs. I moved fast. I didn't know how long I would get. The main corridor, the junction, the door to the records office. I stopped outside it. The door was ajar. I pushed it open with the end of the pipe and went in. Mikola was small. That was the first thing, the thing that hit me before anything else. In life he had been a large man, broad across the shoulders, the physical confidence of someone who had spent decades in difficult terrain. What was on the floor of the records office was no longer large. Violence had reduced him in ways I won't describe completely, because it feels repulsive to desecrate the memory of a great man with such disgusting terms. And because I think my mind had since edited out some of what was in that room without my permission, protecting me from the full inventory. What I can tell you is this. He was on his back, and his face was intact, which was a mercy, and I could see him clearly enough to know him. The grey stubble, the lines around his eyes, the zone authority jacket still on his shoulders, or most of it. His expression was not what I expected. He did not look frightened. He looked like a man who had been in the middle of something and had been stopped. He looked like a man who had known this was a possibility and made his peace with the possibility a long time ago. The guilt came in and sat in my chest like a stone that is still there. The bag was by the door, a meter inside the room, placed with the deliberateness that I'd come to understand was Mikola's signature. Everything he did was deliberate. I grabbed it and went back upstairs, and I did not look at the room again. Counter was at 1.6 when I reached the fourth floor, rising. I had 4 minutes, maybe less. I went through the bag fast. Water, rations, first aid kit, spare batteries, same size as my counter. I registered this and kept moving. A printed map of the zone, folded, Mikola's handwriting across it in annotations I couldn't read in the low light, and the zone authority tablet in its rubberized case. I opened it, still charged, Mikola's staff login already open, counter at 1.8. Camera network first, because it was the first icon I saw. I went to the hospital exterior feed. Jeep there, courtyard empty, gate open, road south. All of it still there. Then I went to the archive, dragging the scrubber back through last night. And at 2:17, I found 3 frames before the camera angle shift. Those 3 frames was enough. Wrong proportions, wrong number of apparent limbs, moving across the courtyard toward the forest in a way that wasn't natural locomotion in any sense I recognized. Counter at 2.0. I kept moving through the tablet. Documents folder, 1 item, a series of files, photographs, and text documents, all created at different dates over the past decade. I opened the most recent. Text, typed in Ukrainian, the translation app rendering it in broken fragments as I scrolled. If you are reading, contingency. I read fast, the translation app losing words, catching others. Does not come up while the light is held, confirmed across 11 years. Counter at 2.2. Still reading. Do not go basement. Goes there when fed. Full. Counter returns to baseline when below. I looked at the counter. 2.4 and climbing. Baseline means below. Slow, no noise. The translation dropped out for two lines and came back for the last one. I looked at the window. The light outside was the deep blue of 10 minutes before full dark. Not gone yet, but it was the last of it. The document said not to look at the basement door. Mikola had been studying this thing for 11 years. He knew its geography the way I knew the layout of my own flat, because it had become part of him through repetition. But the warning about the basement door was specific. A place it goes when full. However, it wasn't full. It was trying to be, looking for me the whole afternoon. The last place I hadn't looked was in there. My last glimmer of hope, in the most dangerous place imaginable. I had to time it right, making sure the thing was along a corridor on a middle level, searching. I made it back to the ground floor, counter at 1.6. The buckled frame was visible at the far end of the corridor, the grey rectangle of the courtyard light coming through the gap, the jeep beyond it, the road south beyond that. Everything I'd been trying to reach all day, 40 feet away. And I turned my back on it and walked the other direction. The corridor felt longer this way. Every step taking me further from the light and closer to the end of the building I'd been avoiding since the morning. The basement door was at the corridor's end, wooden, swollen with decades of damp, standing slightly ajar, a darkness beyond with steps going down. I stopped 6 feet from it and looked at the counter. 1.6. Steady. I looked at the basement door and breathed to compose myself. Then I looked at the wall beside it. I almost missed it. It was below eye level, set into the exterior wall at ankle height, perhaps half a meter square. One of those access points that exists in old institutional buildings for coal delivery or drainage management or any of the dozen unglamorous functions that buildings require that nobody thinks about. The metal plate was black with algae, the edges furred with decades of damp growth, the hinges corroded to the same dark color as the stone around it, so that the whole thing disappeared into the wall unless you were crouched and looking directly at it. The mechanism was a simple latch that flips up and releases. I put my fingers on it. The metal was rough, corroded, wet, and cold enough to sting. I lifted it, and it moved. Not much. The corrosion had fused it partially, but it moved. The latch scraping upward with a sound that was small but present in the corridor silence. I stopped breathing, listened. Counter at 1.4. I lifted the latch the rest of the way, and the plate shifted inward a centimeter, the seal of decades breaking with a soft exhalation of stale air. I looked at the basement door, still ajar, the darkness beyond it unchanged. With the latch undone, I pulled the hatch open. The sound it made was not small. The hinges had been still for God knows how many years, and they said so, loudly. A grinding metal shriek that went up the corridor and into the stairwell and through every floor of the building simultaneously. I felt it in my teeth. I yanked the hatch the rest of the way open because stopping halfway was worse than slowing down at this point. I pressed myself against the wall, looked at the counter, and watched the number. It went from 1.4 to 3.8 in one breath, and then from below the basement door came a sound I had no category for, the rushing scramble of something with mass, and it was coming up. I went through the hatch head first, no room for anything except forward. On my stomach, the bag dragged behind me, the frame of the hatch catching my shoulders. I wrenched through it regardless, stones scraping my back through the jacket, the cold outside air hitting my face as my hands found frozen ground. Behind me, the basement door hit the corridor wall as something came through it at speed, the impact shuddering through the building's frame and into the ground beneath my palms. I pulled my legs free and scrambled upright. And I ran. At the rear of the courtyard, a chain-link fence to my left, the building at my back making sounds I was not going to stop to interpret. I hit the corner of the building and came around it into the front courtyard. I didn't slow down, legs already burning, the gate ahead of me and the Jeep between me and it. I got to the driver's door and got inside, pulled it shut, and the sound the door made as it closed was enormous in the silence that followed. I sat with my back against the seat, chest heaving, and I listened to the silence while looking at the counter. 3.1. Dropping. 2.8. 2.6. I looked through the windscreen at the hospital entrance. The courtyard was empty. The gate opened beyond it, and the access road running south into the dark. And the sky above it, the deep blue of dusk, the last light still hovering, the only thing stopping it from carrying on the chase. It had stayed inside. 2.0, 1.8, 1.6, background. I put the key in the ignition. The engine turned over and found no purchase. I waited 1 second, jaw clenched, and turned it again. It caught, and I had it in first before it had finished deciding to run. The gate, the access road, south. I took one last look at the building behind me, and I did not look at it again. 1 kilometer out, I reached into the bag for the counter. My hand found the tablet. I pulled it out and turned it over. The screen was dark, a crack running corner to corner across the glass, the rubberized case compressed on one side where the hatch frame had caught it as I came through. I pressed the power button. Nothing. I put it on the passenger seat and looked at the road. Mikla's document, the camera footage, the 3 frames it had captured. 11 years of annual records, the proof that any of it had happened, that a man had spent the better part of his adult life managing something in a building in the zone, was gone. The checkpoint lights appeared at 11 kilometers. I watched them come and did not think about what I was going to say, because the empty seat would say it before I could. I drove through the barrier and stopped the Jeep, leaving the engine running. The zone authority officer came out, the young one. He came to the window and I put it down. He looked at me, then at the passenger seat where Mikla should have been. He looked at the tablet for a moment, then he looked at me. I had nothing to give him. No footage, no proof of anything except the raw strip on my forearm and the fact that I was here and Mikla wasn't. The zone authority stepped back from the window and unclipped the radio from his jacket, raised it without taking his eyes off the empty seat, and began speaking to it quietly in Ukrainian. I sat in the running Jeep with a cracked tablet on the seat beside me and nothing else. And I let him. They did not find Mikla. The search lasted 4 days. 2 additional zone authority officers, a dog that wouldn't go past the ground floor entrance and had to be led away. The official conclusion came 8 days after I drove through the checkpoint. Structural collapse, floor instability on the upper levels, and the victim conducting a professional assessment of a compromised building. It happened in the zone. The paperwork acknowledged the absence of a body including a clause on debris field scale and search limitations. The hospital was closed to future visitors within the week. The Zone Authority website was quietly updated. The building was removed from approved itineraries pending a structural review that everyone understood would never happen. I was interviewed twice. Same room, same two officers, and I gave the same account both times. I signed my name twice at the bottom of the same form. I was eventually flown home. I filed the piece. It ran in February. The ecological recovery angle, the wolves, the rewilding, the Ferris wheel photograph is because you always run the Ferris wheel. The Palace of Culture at dawn, the mosaic facade at the first light. The apartment blocks on Lesya Ukrainka Street have the birch trees growing up past the first floor windows. The piece was 6,000 words, and I wrote it in 11 days. I knew why it came so quickly, and I didn't look at that reason directly either. The response was good. The editor emailed to say it was their most read long-form piece in 2 years, and asked whether I'd consider a follow-up. There was appetite, she said. Readers wanted more of the Zone. I told her. I felt I covered the subject. This was true in every sense. But I didn't explain it to her.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.